it was quite interesting because technically at the time, I think there was some change. Anybody could drive a double-decker bus because it was neither an HGV vehicle because it wasn't carrying goods, nor a PSV vehicle or whatever it's called, a public service vehicle, because it wasn't carrying passengers. However, no insurance company, I think, would actually give you insurance for a bus, possibly also because it was owned by the Antipater Group, if you weren't guaranteeing that the person who was driving it, you know, had some experience of driving a large vehicle. In theory, there was one person, but we would take it to places where there was an anti-apartheid group. So the idea was that, you know, the bus would go there, but obviously you'd liaise and the local group would use it as a focus for a day of activities. And because it was a large double-decker bus, it would, you know, intrinsically quite often get publicity in places like Chesterfield or, you know, some of the smaller places. Obviously, you know, the fact that you had a large double-decker bus, very clearly with the campaigning message, would be, you know, a story in itself, whereas I suspect in, you know, Birmingham or Glasgow it wasn't quite such a sort of big story as such. So it was purchased, I know, in... it was either late 88 or was it early 89, but as part of the boycott 89 campaign, there was a sort of a particular focus, and so I think it was Mick Flynn, the local group secretary, and myself as field officer who basically coordinated it, and I'm sure it must have visited around 100 locations. We did do it from something like May to September, or maybe it was into October, but it didn't include the sort of height of winter on the grounds that, you know, parking and pouring green in a slightly desolate town centre, you might not do too well. But it must have been out on the road 5-6 months. Then it had a break, and because I'm trying to remember the 1990 campaign, but anyway, it was Freedom. So, I mean, it was redecorated as the Freedom Bus. I'm pretty sure it's that way around. To do some, you know, a similar exercise the following year, you know, was very well received. I think the only things which one learned, because it's a slightly obscure sort of area that, you know, activists don't, what does it mean? Ensure that all your people realise that where there are low bridges and low trees, because it got a few odd bashes when, you know, people who obviously you'd say, can you make sure, can you get it there, would forget that actually they were trying to send it. And I know one of the drivers getting immensely fed up being sent up some lane and finding himself with under a low bridge and in effect having to do something like a 20-point turn on a narrow lane with a double-decker bus, and certainly lost a window on a bough of a tree or whatever on a couple of occasions. But there'd been a specially commissioned film, certainly in 1989, about the boycott campaign, which was something like 15 minutes long. It was quite a short, it was a sort of film you could get people to pop on and sort of watch. It wasn't, you know, really long. And I must say, I was quite astonished. We shoved, I think, an ordinary domestic television and video player on it. It was called Fruits of Freedom, I think that was. Yeah, and I suspect it was, yeah. But that was commissioned sort of especially for that. And yes, I was just very impressed with the telly and video, which were, you know, basically bumped around the country for 6 months and were still fine when they came back. And I think we also tried to... There was an exhibition downstairs. That was upstairs. We'd in effect left quite a lot of the seating from the original bus, so, you know, in the sense that, you know, obviously it cost quite a lot to convert it, but it wasn't too bad. I think we left about two-thirds of the seating in and had the screen at the front. And downstairs had taken out most of the seating so that you had more space for exhibitions and leaflets and things. It was an ex-Southampton bus company bus, because apparently Southampton Bus Company was one of the few that specialised in converting their buses if you wanted them into something else. And so obviously we paid, well, I'm sure the Antipater Group paid a reasonable amount of money, but they did do actually quite a good
well, yes, so that was, I think, you know, you could have got quite a lot more. Leyland Olympians were, I think, generation after Routemasters, but they're quite solid old beasts with, I think, Perkins diesel engines, which would have sort of kept going forever, really. But it had no power-assisted steering, and I do remember the guy who did it the first year, called Mark Eastgate, who now lives in Spain, but I'm tenuously in touch with him.
nice guy, but he was quite a wiry guy, and literally in the summer he'd wear a t-shirt, but you could see if he was in too tight moves, you could literally see his muscles, because he'd be able to wrestle the bus to actually get it to sort of do any sort of tight manoeuvres. But I think that, you know, was a useful tool, and I think got the message out in some of the, you know, more interesting. It also went to a few festivals in the summer. He's just trying to remember exactly where it went. I think it went to Glastonbury Festival. Did it go to WOMAD?
89.